Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRue Show. It's Saturday, April 26, 2008. It's now 3 in the afternoon Eastern Time in the United States. We're live on internet broadcasting from 3 to 4. And our topic today concerns the recent trip. It was the week of April 15 to Mexico, to Monterrey, by Lyndon LaRouche and his associates. And his call there and his many activities to defeat and vanquish the British World Wildlife Fund, WTO, the whole nexus of agencies out to destroy mankind. We have a chance to obliterate them now. And LaRouche had many things to say in his many private and big public meetings in Monterey. So to discuss that, we have people who traveled with Lynn or in advance of him even. We have here in the studio, I'm very glad, Dennis Small from EIR News Service can be with us. Welcome, Dennis.
Thanks, Marcia. Glad to be here.
And if I forgot my name, it is Marcia Mary Baker, and I'm with the EIR News Service Economics Section. But I'm very pleased that two people from the LaRouche Youth Movement internationally are speaking to us off-site from the very famous Basement Team, the foundation of science and music and other work for humanity. We welcome Tarana Dorsey. Hi.
Hello. Hi, Marcia.
Good. Hi. And Sky Shields.
Hello.
Great. So I mentioned one thing and we'll turn right to the report that we're going to get, this firsthand report from this LaRouche intervention and great meeting, set of meetings. But May 7th, please everyone note that there will be an international webcast by Lyndon LaRouche. It will be based out of Washington, D.C., and it will be 1 p.m. Eastern Time. You can watch Mr. LaRouche's Political Action Committee website for details more about it, but I'm sure this will be a combat update on what we were talking about. And the if you want more information besides the website, which is LaRouchePAC.com, you can also call 800, this is toll-free in the United States, 800-929-7566. But I will say that website has some of the text transcription of some of Mr. LaRouche's public speeches and interchange in Mexico. And our executive intelligence review is just putting together for a deadline of tonight full transcripts of all of this. And that will be available in the Executive Intelligence Review that's printed next week and is also available online at LaRouchePub.com. But without more, let's turn right to Dennis Small. And could you begin with his agenda or what the whole purpose was of this this terrific week in Mexico, Dennis?
Sure. Well, this was the fourth or fifth visit by Lyndon LaRouche to the Monterrey area in the last half dozen years. He's something of an institution there, as he is internationally, for people who want to know what the hell is going on in the world and to listen to his options and alternatives and study them very closely. The in 3 days of activity, he packed in really an enormous amount of political and intellectual work. The two highlights, in my view, were the featured presentation he gave at the Technological Institute of Monterrey, which is one of the most elite schools, or rather one of the schools for the elite of Mexico in Monterrey, where LaRouche has repeatedly been invited and spoken. And I'll tell you a little bit about that and what happened there. And the other crucial highlight was LaRouche's Saturday meeting with the LaRouche Youth Movement of Mexico, but with the presence and active participation of the international youth movement, in particular, Tarana and Sky, who are also part of this program. In addition to that, Mr. LaRouche had two brief radio interviews with radio stations in Mexico City. He also held a couple of private meetings to discuss programmatic and economic issues, in particular, the all-important Plino Water Project, which is part of the NAWAPA Plus program, which LaRouche has presented for all of the Americas. The basic idea being, and this is what he said repeatedly in Mexico and has always been his strategic point, there is no necessity for this global crisis. The British-led war and genocide policies can and must be defeated. And the basis for doing so can be developed in particular with the U.S.-Mexican relationship, which has always been the paradigm or the leverage point of U.S. relations with the entire nations of the so-called Third World. So that was the framework of LaRouche's meeting. The interesting thing about the meeting at the Tech, as it's called, was LaRouche was enormously well received by a group of about 240, 250 youth from the Tech in particular. And what LaRouche commented on himself afterwards is, I think, the crucial point for the whole trip, which is he had been in that same auditorium 2 years ago with a group about almost the same number of people. He had talked about similar topics, the world financial crisis, and as he put it, I'm the same person as I was then. But the response on this last visit was substantially different, far more open, far more insistent on hearing what LaRouche had to say. The previous time, 2 years ago, he had been received with great interest and politely, but not quite with that sharp, urgent edge of, we have to know what LaRouche has to say. And the reason for that, as Lynn himself explained afterwards, was that 2 years ago, Mexico was in the throes of its own presidential election campaign. There was some false hope and expectation, illusions perhaps, among the students and the others in Monterrey that the incoming or the new president would somehow be able to address the problems of the day, which of course they weren't able to do. Now Mexico is facing starvation, the way the world is facing starvation. Now Mexico is facing hyperinflation, including food hyperinflation, as the world is facing food hyperinflation. Now Mexico is facing the likely prospect of 2 million Mexicans being violently deported back to Mexico from the United States in the immediate period ahead, to a country with no jobs, with no opportunity, no food, no prospects whatsoever under the current world financial system. So Mexico is looking at genocide straight in the face. Mexico is staring down the barrel of a gun. And when LaRouche came to Monterrey this a couple of weeks ago, that's why they were paying extremely close attention to what he had to say, because he laid out an answer, a solution to this crisis, which is a global reorganization, and in particular, changing the circumstances inside the United States, as with LaRouche's crucial role inside the Democratic Party and in defining what the nature of the presidency is going to be in this period. So I think that difference, that change from LaRouche's visit 2 years ago to today, is among the most significant political points to be drawn from the trip.
Right. Now, do you want to bring out, maybe Tehran or Sky want to add something in here, but what did people, perhaps either the young people or the private meetings participants, bring out most about the content of how you would change things? I mean, you've been working with Mr. LaRouche on the what you might call the Southwest Desert American Desert, Great American Desert Project, NAWAPA Plus, and so. But what did
let me actually shift the focus of it a little bit, Marcia, because it's true that people responded to the optimism of what LaRouche presented programmatically. And LaRouche said over and over again, the Pleno is doable. It's not the full solution, but we can do it. It'll create optimism. But that's not the real optimism which he unleashed. The real crucial question is the youth movement. And that's why I said the other most salient point of his trip was the meeting with the youth in Mexico, because the issue that was posed there was that there has to be a complete generational and intellectual policy renewal in Mexico as around the world, that the baby boomer generation had screwed it up, that the baby boomer generation was incapable of addressing this crisis, and that the youth could, if they overcame the particular Mexican forms of these ideologies, such as the cacique problem, which is basically the big, it's the Hispanic version of the big honcho, you know, the big fish in the small pond, who doesn't really care about the world. He just wants to make sure he remains the big shot, even as the whole world is falling apart. But the option which LaRouche presented to that was rigorous scientific work, especially in the physical sciences. And that was the other absolutely critical point which was developed during this trip. So I think the appropriate thing would be, since that was the real point of optimism for actually getting Mexico or the United States or the world out of this, I would ask Sky and Tirana to jump in at this point on that.
Sure. Well, I can say a few things about some of the meetings and conferences, discussions, and organizing that we were able to engage in prior to LaRouche's arrival. There were several universities that we went to, different faculties that we addressed, the architecture faculty, the science and mathematics department, and an agricultural campus in Saltillo, Mexico, that we were able to also go and meet with some of the students at. And one of the things that I immediately found in our discussions and some of the questions from the youth is that, one, they didn't quite have a sense of what was happening in the United States with the complete crash of the financial system that we had adopted in the last 40 years, the events with the mortgage crisis here, the events with Bear Stearns, etc. But upon a quick briefing on that topic, many young people were completely hungry to figure out and to understand what's going on in the world and to engage in a discussion about the kind of work that we're doing here in our youth movement, not only politically around the Homeowners Bank Protection Act, some of the fight that we have here in the United States, but more importantly, how we're building a quality of leadership in the individuals in our youth movement that are capable of taking on that level of leadership in the world in this time of crisis, of being world citizens as opposed to political activists in our local areas. So maybe Sky wants to say some more on that.
I think just the discussion of that was, the discussion, like Dennis was saying, the discussion was the bulk of the work that we did directly with our own members there and in the presentations was discussing first how to apply a real rigorous scientific method, the quality of scientific method that Lynn's been working to develop with us here in the basement, working systematically through the works of Johannes Kepler, up through the works of Carl Friedrich Gauss, and figuring out how Kepler's method was hidden, hidden in plain sight by Gauss, so that the proper people would be able to discover it, and then how we should be using that method that's required to discover Gauss's actual process of investigation, how we'd apply that to certain historical and political investigations. And some of that came up very clearly in the presentation of the video that we produced, the firewall video, which is what we showed for the first large presentation at the campus there. And it was interesting, the very second question after playing the video, firewall, was from one student who asked, why don't we get this sort of discussion in our classrooms here on the campus? And that led to a very good discussion about the role of the current corrupted educational system plays in maintaining a policy of empire, and maintaining the real British style feudalism, and suppressing the kind of American revolutionary impulse that you would have both in the United States and Mexico otherwise. And that became the real central discussion both in our stay in Monterrey and then later in Mexico City. You know, what is scientific method and how is it applied? And our focus quite heavily, right, our heavy focus right now is in creating a capability amongst our membership in Mexico to work through the works of Kepler, to work through the works of Gauss, the way we presented them on the website, and then for them to take part in the longer-term research projects that LaRouche has planned for us here, the youth movement here.
Right, so let me just ask, in other words, you were in Saltillo, Monterrey, and Mexico City, Sky and Tehran, is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just there's a tradition of U.S.-Mexican cooperation, which some of the listeners may be aware of, others not, which, it has two high points in the last couple of centuries' history. One was the cooperation of Lincoln and Juarez, where Mexico, under Juarez and with Lincoln's help, was able to kick the Habsburg Emperor Maximilian out of the country, or kick his government out of the country. He himself wasn't able to leave the country because he was executed for his crimes, a fact about which many Mexicans are quite proud, that they want nothing to do with the imperial approach and have a real strong Republican tradition. Similarly, during the period of FDR in the United States, Cárdenas, General Lázaro Cárdenas, nationalized Mexico's oil again, with the support and the backing of FDR in the United States. So any half-sensible Mexican knows perfectly well that his country's sovereignty and development depends absolutely on what happens inside the United States. And when people look to the United States, the only thing that they see that actually brings them some hope under these current circumstances is Lyndon LaRouche and LaRouche's political influence in the United States, and again, his youth movement. Now, what tends to happen under conditions of pessimism and under conditions even of militant radicalization and crisis, like is occurring today as around the world with the food crisis and so on, is you can get radical localism. And I'm coming back to this cacique problem because it is really extremely important, and it's also very important for people listening elsewhere in the world to recognize themselves in the mirror of this thing. Because this radical localism, no matter how militant it gets, is absolutely not going to solve the crisis. In fact, LaRouche emphasized this is extremely dangerous. This is the kind of thing that can lead a mass strike into fascism. The crucial thing is leadership, the issue of leadership under conditions of radicalization. And that can only be done by people who have a global international identity, i.e. an identity in science and physical sciences in particular. I actually thought it was really appropriate and quite striking. I'd like to have Sky and Tarana comment on this, see what they thought as well. But that when LaRouche began his presentation to the youth, it was actually, as chance had it, the circumstances had it, it was in response to a question that was being asked in the context of a presentation which Tarana had made in the part of the morning. But it was a very serious question from a Mexican youth saying, I'm having trouble, I'm struggling to understand the idea that Einstein and others have presented of this idea of a finite but a self-bounded universe. How does that actually work? So LaRouche's first discussion with the youth of Mexico started at this level. It was at the highest epistemological level. And I think if I understand what Sky was just saying, that's exactly the approach that you guys were taking and the discussions that you had throughout and all in Saltillo and Monterrey and Mexico City as well.
Yeah, that's the idea. The what we're recruiting people to in Mexico and in the United States and around the world is a revolutionary political movement, which does not mean any particular political flank. At any given time, there are some key political fights that have to be won. There's some absolutely crucial political fights that have to be won. The situation right now with water and food production in Mexico, which we're going to be intervening into significantly with the work on these huge water projects like the Plino and its relation to the Nahuapa as continent-wide projects for the transformation of deserts and the creation of jobs. Those are crucial given the strategic situation we have right at this moment. But the actual goal of this sort of project is you want to recruit first a small group of leadership internationally, and then by means of that small group of leadership, recruit the entire population internationally to the development of the human species as a whole. Yep. That is, that every citizen, every member of our political movement in Mexico should have a very clear idea that their responsibility is transforming the creative powers of human beings in Europe, in Asia, in Africa, creating a situation where the human species is being pushed further along in actual evolutionary goals. So we're taking our rightful position as sort of the directors of the evolutionary process of the universe as a whole, and we'll be able to do that. And then that's going to be something that's conscious in our political activities and our deployment elsewhere. And that was the discussion. That was the point of sort of shaping the discussion the way we did and the way Lynn did very clearly in the Saturday discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and this also came up in Lynn's discussion and address at the Tecnológico, the Monterrey University, where he brought up the idea of the difference between a movement based around a martyr, where, you know, the martyr dies and nothing happens because the movement was based around an individual, versus a movement of committed to developing the capabilities of leadership in each member of that movement. And this is a crucial question for our generation, because our ability to use the potential that we have of being a new generation to completely change the direction of the world right now, of world policy, especially in this time period, is based upon that ability, that mastering of the tools that LaRouche is providing us, which, you know, and the authority that he has, which originates entirely, as he continually stresses, from his own personal development in a discovery of scientific method, from his early rejection of, you know, the secondary school teaching Euclidean axiomatic system, to his continued forecasting around long-term processes and arcs in history. And so that's the foundation of the entire curriculum of our youth movement. And that's what's exciting to be seen in the work that we did in Mexico, is connecting up of that process and the development of that curriculum here that we've created over the last 8 years now in the United States, and the new potential that we have to create that process further and further in Mexico, which also is a real fight, because just as here, there's a contradiction between perceived authority, which, you know, all you have to do is look at George Bush, and you've got a proof right there that perceived authority really doesn't have much to do with real leadership policy-wise in the world today. And true leadership, which is represented by LaRouche, and which is based, as I said, on this fight of the individual identity around ideas.
I suppose that came up pretty directly maybe at the Technological Institute, where on to face the fact you really can forecast does cut against the grain of all the economics faculties, right?
Yeah, it was funny. One of the questions by one of the youth was, you know, you've been forecasting an economic collapse for 15 years and it still hasn't happened. You know, what are you talking about?
Oh.
but it was great, because the way that Lynn answered it was, well, first of all, I mean, it's obvious that it has occurred, and second, he went through what real forecasting is, that it's not a prediction, that it's a knowledge of history, of long arcs of history. And, I mean, that's available for people to look at. The transcript and the audio of that discussion, the address, is available for people to look at on our website at LaRouchePack.com, which I recommend highly.
Yes, people, yeah, you can get that there. Well, let me ask another another question about the aspect of what LaRouche stressed. I was looking at a transcript of a whole back and forth with LaRouche and youth, Tarana, after your presentation on Kepler and so forth, and Lynn ended some comments. He said, well, anyone who believes in environmentalism today is scientifically an idiot and is probably dangerous to your health. Did you encounter people still throwing up to you or to LaRouche some of the standard cliches of any aspect of environmentalism? I mean, that they would still believe in anything like Al Gore, or that resources are truly limited, or the reason, that's what I'm just on the programmatic side.
Not a lot so much with the actual discussions with the youth there, but there is quite a lot of money and time and attention being invested in trying to inundate the population there with all of this, the crap of global warming, and then a lot of this other junk. The first day we got there, there was a Greenpeace conference. But it was sort of funny. Some members showed up, and at the Greenpeace conference, they had about 4 attendees and a videotaped presentation.
And several of them left before it was over.
And then at the other events, there was similar things like that. So it's a big pressure. And I don't know how indicative it is of the overall environment amongst the youth there, but the response from the youth to a lot of this junk, a lot of the fraud of what Gore and these people are pushing, is not really commensurate with the effort that's being put into trying to elicit a response.
Yeah, what I would add to that is that the people do tend to see through this stuff, but they don't really see what the nature of the enemy is. That's another thing that LaRouche was really emphasizing quite a bit on his trip. Over and over and over again, it's the British, it's the British, it's the British. See, in Mexico, people tend to think they've been mistaught history this way, that the big problem is U.S. imperialism. And there have been plenty of things that have happened, operations by the British run through the United States, such as Teddy Roosevelt or Woodrow Wilson or what have you, or Truman and so forth, which have been pretty bad. But there tends to be a lot of empiricism, encouraged empiricism among Mexicans to say, well, it's the gringos, it's the guys right across the border who are responsible for this. Now, LaRouche really picked up on the situation around the Plino and the fact that the WWF, the Worldwide Fund for Nature, I think is their current incarnation, are the ones who are responsible for trying to stop this development project from going through. Now, the WWF is straight British. It was founded by Prince Philip and Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, who was a card-carrying Nazi. And the only part of that he dropped in his later life was the card-carrying part. He kept the Nazi aspect straight through. And what the WWF is doing, and you can see this on their website, they are actually promoting the sponsorship by their supporters of vampire bats. That vampire bats are cuddly, nice little animals that have to be encouraged. And if you make a $25 contribution to the WWF, you will be sponsoring a specific vampire bat. I don't know how many billions of these things there are in the world. But you sponsor them, and you get in the mail a little stuffed animal vampire bat sent back to you. If you give $50, you also get a Happy Mother's Day bag with it. But LaRouche used this question to go after the British. That this is absolutely directly the British. They are the ones who are behind the global warming scandal. They are the ones who are behind Malthusianism. They are the ones who favor vampire bats. They want to suck your blood. And they are the ones who are saying that there can be no development of water resources in northern Mexico, like in this Plino project, because it will endanger the environment and endanger other species. So this is a perfect target. One of the meetings that LaRouche had, and this also is available on the website, was a fairly lengthy discussion with the pro-Plino committee, the northwest of Mexico, which was organized on the initiative of some of LaRouche's associates in that part of the country. But it includes trade unionists and farmers and others who are absolutely insistent that they want this great water project developed. So LaRouche's intervention around this focused heavily around the role of the British and the British responsibility for what's going on. He drew that out in terms of the long wave, the long arc of history of the role of the British going back all the way to the Treaty of Paris, in particular to 1763, and how that became the dominant force globally against what the United States has always represented. So to transmit this kind of idea of current live acting history to enable people to wage the right fight, not to just want to fight. There's plenty of people who want to fight, but to wage the right fight against the right enemy in the right way. That's a different matter, and that takes some serious hard work. As LaRouche said over and over and over again in his discussions with the youth, rigor, absolutely rigorous intellectual work. No cheap shot, knee-jerk, cacique-style reactions to what seem to be local phenomena. That's Euclideanism, that's sense certainty, that's responding to immediate perception, and that is not reality. You've got to look at the reality of the situation. And I think this really had a tremendous impact on people. One note in that regard to show how this kind of organizing really works if you tell people the truth, is that the members of the Pro-Plino Committee, when they got back to their home state of Sonora, called a meeting of 50 trade unionists locally there, gave a report back, and the person who was at the meeting with LaRouche said, look, the single most important thing I learned out of that meeting, the most important thing, is that I found out that the enemy is the British. Now I understand that. So that's actually very encouraging to see the way some people wake up to these things.
Do you want to add anything to that, Sky or Tarana, or there's another question upcoming, but do you...
I would just say that's a similar response that we found in the youth, reflected by the question that was asked, as Sky mentioned, by one of the students after we showed the Cortafuego, the firewall video, which the whole arc of the video is to communicate the potential that existed after the Civil War in the United States, between the United States and Mexico, in terms of developing a whole hemisphere of continental sovereign nation-state republics, versus the British system, which, you know, is reflected by the 1763 period, and also the sponsoring of the Confederacy to destroy and break up the Union. And so the development from that period has been up to this day and is, you know, ever more clear to us in the present moment, the collaboration of the United States with these continental nation-state republics versus the attempt of the British system to re-enslave nations into a feudal system. So that's a real question in the minds of the young people as well, in terms of learning that history. And they responded to it very quickly. All we had to do was really show the firewall video, and then people were asking questions and wanting to come to meetings and sign up and engage in more discussion with us about how to teach other young people that idea of history, because it's crucial to our identity and our ability to fight effectively right now. So.
Well, that's great. And by the way, anyone listening to this, if you want to see it for yourself, you can look on this Worldwide Fund for Nature and see that this part of Northwest Mexico, the state of Sonora, I don't know what else, maybe part of Durango, is part of 19 designated areas in the world, I think, Dennis, that's supposed to be no man's hands off for humanity, because this is supposed to be where it's supposed to be saved for nature, some construct that's really fascist. But otherwise, let me just ask one thing on a quick history of this, Dennis. The people who traveled from this western state to Monterey to meet with LaRouche, who've been active for some time, they are leading a drive, I understand, that has that's racking up some success in the sense of Mexico City, or attention to the fact that there can be a breakout of this decades of anti-development, the prevention of any water management projects. They are getting a hearing forcing a hearing for this. Is that right?
Yeah. What's happened is that the governors of the three states in question, which are the states of Nayarit, Sinaloa, and Sonora, have all taken interest in this, and the senators from those three states also have raised the issue in the Congress, in the Senate in Mexico. And so there is some discussion, and a certain amount of resources have been provided for a feasibility study to be initiated. So there's a sense that the political pressure that's been built around this has actually forced them to take some steps in this direction. I also think that what's really important is that the trade union movement of Mexico, the CTM in this case, the Mexican Workers Confederation, the largest trade union confederation in Mexico, is actively involved in the Pro Pleno Committee. And in fact, one of the state leaders of that federation, who was at this meeting with LaRouche that we've just described, had previously been at a meeting in Ottawa, Canada, where the subject of great infrastructure projects globally was discussed, as well as this Pleno project as well. So what they're doing is they're fighting the natural tendency in Mexico of this cacique problem of being a big fish in a small pond. And thinking they can solve their problems locally, to realize that this is actually a global issue. This is not something that is going to be solved locally, except to the degree to which you find a vulnerability for the British enemy in that local situation, and you kick them in the butt in that flank, on that exposed flank. And that's how this thing has gone ahead. Now, I mean, one of the things that LaRouche has been talking about, and I think it's real important to get our listeners to think about this aspect of it, is, look, you had the Free Trade Agreement of the Americas, the famous NAFTA. This has been in place since about 1994, so this has had 14 years to prove what a disaster it is, and it has exceeded all expectations in terms of how disastrous it actually is. It is far worse than almost anybody except for us expected it to be. Mexico's economy has been destroyed. The U.S. economy has been destroyed. Free trade and globalization has led to a situation where Mexicans, 50% of the labor force is unemployed. There is not enough food to eat. Mexicans were told to stop growing their own food. They were previously self-sufficient, nearly self-sufficient in food. They were told that they would be able to get cheaper food imported internationally. And as agriculture and other areas of the Mexican economy collapsed, thank you, globalization, thank you, free trade, millions and millions of Mexicans, now 13 million Mexicans, are in the United States. the largest single source of employment for Mexicans in the United States had been the sector of construction. Well, guess what's happening to construction, ladies and gentlemen? Construction is, of course, collapsing as the global financial disintegration works its way through the question of the real estate market and the foreclosures and so on and so forth. So the jobs that these people had are not there anymore. And you have a situation building in the United States which, as LaRouche has described, up to 2 million Mexicans are going to be forcibly shipped back across the border. And that's going to create a situation in Mexico of an absolute explosion. These are people who, where the families have members on both sides of the border. You have the Mexican-Americans in the United States, the Hispanic community, especially in states like California or Texas, but especially California, which are so decisive in Democratic Party politics and in electoral politics in general, that this issue of U.S.-Mexican relations and development in LaRouche's proposals around the Pleno becomes an immediate vital issue in this electoral period inside the United States. So LaRouche addressed the question in exactly that way. And I'd be interested to know what thoughts Sky and Tarana have about how we're going to take this out to the population in the United States as well, besides what they saw in Mexico and worked on down there.
We had a discussion there in Monterrey. We had a discussion with the members from Sonora who are doing the hands-on organizing with the Pleno project and the Nahuapa project, the Pleno project in particular, giving that taken up inside Mexico. But we, for a while now, been organizing in California, in particular, around the idea of the Nahuapa project and this idea of the transformation of the deserts that is shared between the U.S. and Mexico, and just changing the whole political geometry with respect to water supplies, food supplies, changing the environment in which all the political activity which is currently taking place is occurring.
Just real quick, for those who might not know what the Nahuapa project is, it stands for the North American Water and Power Alliance. It was a project that was originally put forward back in the 1960s in the U.S. Congress, and it's generally an idea to bring water that otherwise is fresh water that's becoming ocean water in Canada and run it down through the Great American Desert and into Mexico. So,
and there have been some discussions now between, in particular, members in Los Angeles and Sonora and in Mexico City, around the idea of deploying this project in something similar to other deployments we've had coming out of the basement, what people saw around the firewall video and things like that. And that those are going to have to be, those will be continued further.
Right. And let me just ask Sky and Tarana. I think you were in discussions with LaRouche even this morning on follow-up, and he was speaking about what Dennis was just saying. Even family members are on both sides of the border or on other states in Mexico distributed throughout the whole region.
Yeah, well, there had been a question asked by one of the other youth movement members that's here working in what we call the war room, which is, coordinating and leading some of the operations of our youth movement internationally. And she had asked the question about how this organizing that we've done in Mexico reflects back in terms of the organizing here in the United States and especially in California. And this is exactly the discussion that Lynn entered into in response to that question, is the dynamic that exists of not only family members who are family members of people who live in Mexico that are living, especially in the Los Angeles area, that there's an entire dynamic of people on both sides of the border that will be highly responsive to this specific political question of the Nahuapa collaboration with the Pleno and Pligón projects in Mexico. And that this is something that we, as a political organization, have done a lot of work on over many years, and will be able to very effectively use right now, especially in the context of the upcoming U.S. election and the amount of people that this is a very close idea to in the U.S. population and in Mexico.
Well, let me just ask on the negative side of the kinds of the opposite of this North American Water and Power Alliance or the Plino Project for Northwestern Mexico and so forth, that in fact, these British networks that you've all been talking about that manifest in the Worldwide Fund for Nature and so forth, they're also financially going wild, like with Schwarzenegger's administration in California, for these swindles of privatization called public-private, I think they should be called public-private Ponzi schemes or something like that. But Mexico has been looted with those also, Dennis, right? I mean, besides privatizing banks, highways, and there's an assault on the oil resources. So this was a backdrop at the Monterey Technological Institute?
Yeah, a backdrop there. And in pretty much every radio interview that LaRouche had and every discussion, the issue of the oil came up. In a very interesting way, because Mexico's modern development is based on the fact that they nationalized their oil in the late 30s, as I mentioned, with the support of FDR. FDR actually stopped what was the British plan to invade Mexico and overthrow the government because they had gone ahead to nationalize the oil, and Roosevelt said no. So Mexicans know this very well and recall it. It was on the basis of that oil that, especially under the government of José López Portillo from 1976 to 1982, who was a good friend and a collaborator of Lyndon LaRouche's. They met on a number of occasions, especially in 1982. And at the time, López Portillo turned to LaRouche for advice as to what to expect from the international financial forces and what they were planning for Mexico. LaRouche told him outright that they are planning to tear your country limb from limb. The international banking forces are out to do that. And he then, LaRouche did, wrote a document called Operation Juarez, which was for López Portillo, but it was a public document and made available to many of the circles around him, which was a kind of battle manual for how to resist that onslaught and how to organize to create a new world economic order. López Portillo, in fact, did act on the basis of that, but he was left high and dry by the Argentines and the Brazilians, who had originally agreed to work with him around a joint approach on the debt problem and so on and so forth. So that was kind of the backdrop. Now what's happening is that there is a major drive afoot coming out of London and Wall Street for Mexico to privatize its oil industry. That is to say, to sell it off, to hand it over to private interests, with a foot-in-the-door policy a little bit at first, then afterwards a little more, because it's in fact unconstitutional in Mexico. And there is a major battle going on this. The problem here, again, the problem is that people in Mexico understand that that's a bad idea. They're against it. They sincerely and honestly want to fight. But there's two things that they don't understand, and this is where the LaRouche question and the LaRouche youth movement question become absolutely critical. First of all, they don't know who's really behind this. They don't know who's trying to steal their oil. And that's where the British Empire and the British question and the whole historical aspect, which is being worked on intensively in the video presentations which the basement and the war room are working on, including the upcoming one on the 1932 U.S. presidential elections and so on. This historical question is absolutely all important. You got to know who you're attacking. You got to know who's trying to kill you. You got to go after the right forces and therefore ally with the right people. The other point which I think is really significant is people don't know what oil actually is. I mean, they want to defend it, they know it's important, but they don't know what oil actually is. There is still this physiocratic sense that somehow it's a valuable commodity and that economies run on the basis of money. Economies don't run on the basis of money. Economies run on the basis of ideas and the transformation of the physical economy based on the introduction of scientific and technological ideas, which can make something called oil into a resource or something else called seawater into a resource of fusion power, for example. And that concept of the relationship of man to the physical universe around us, that critical question of the role of creativity and science, is another crucial point that LaRouche has emphasized. And I think it's absolutely decisive in the case of Mexico. It really struck me, and I think we'll be hearing a lot more about this, that LaRouche said on a number of occasions that the central tactical fight in Mexico right now is not around the question of oil. It's very important, but that is not the central fight. The central fight is food. And the reason it's around food and water is because the entire world financial system is collapsing. The world is going hungry. There's a violent explosion politically against the WTO and the WWF and so on internationally. There's food hyperinflation. The international enemy is vulnerable on that point, and that's why we have to make that the central focus of the LaRouche movement activities in Mexico. Oil, yes, but ancillary to that, because our central strategic concept is to destroy the international enemy, not to, you know, dent the fenders on the car of the local enemy in town. The crucial difference between a cacique and actual physical scientist.
Before another question, or we can just Sky or Tarana, do you want to say anything about that, your observations or how that came up in Mexico or
yeah,
not?
Yeah, did you run into any caciques?
Yeah, a bit. You know, the discussion right now is that we've got it. We're working to make it so that the youth movement, our youth movement in Mexico, is going to be something that's completely apart from that.
Uh-huh.
And that's going to require some work, but the only way to do that is going to be to inundate our operations with our scientific work, our scientific method, and to make that be the directing force in all of our activities, which is going to be important because we're going to require a political leadership there that can see around some of the things that seem to be immediately pressing from the standpoint of sense perception. For instance, like Dennis was saying, certain things like the privatization of oil seem very direct and very sensual, but with that approach, everything else that seems direct and sensual seems to be true also, like, for instance, the idea that the United States is behind all the social ills right now in Mexico. Certain simplistic assessments like that will become a problem even directing our movement's activities unless there's we've got a clear grounding in scientific method, which will only come from the narrow path that LaRouche has defined. The work through the successive works of Kepler, from the new astronomy to the harmonies, the applying that method to uncovering the approach that Gauss used, and then branching out from that with an understanding of what Gauss's actual conceptual approach was to creating the work that he did in his lifetime, branching out from there into a clear picture of Riemann's work, and then ultimately into the real frontiers, which are represented by the work of Einstein and Vernadsky, but only viewed from the standpoint of that longer arc. And that was our focus in our deployment with the discussions amongst the youth movement there.
Well, let me throw an open-ended question to you following just what you said, because you're discussing with our youth, you had some real time with our youth movement, Mexico City, Monterrey, and so forth. Then you had these faculty campus-based occasions with completely new people, right, who came to your events. Now, on the latter side, with these people that might be new to, maybe they've heard about LaRouche, maybe not, maybe I understand some of them were expecting you to talk about one thing, then you talked about another. But what did you find was there anything different about what dislodged the otherwise reflex reaction to plain old empiricism and got people maybe into thinking in a new way? Is there any pattern or any interesting development from any of these places, the medical faculty, the agriculture faculty, or anything?
We had a real response. I mean, the potential right now for getting an intellectual cadre, especially with the recent developments that we've made here in Leesburg, with the LaRouche's creation of the basement, the creation of the war room, we've got a real capability now to coordinate our activities on a very high level, and the potential inside within Mexico to absorb that and apply that and deploy that is huge. It's enormous.
Yeah, I would say that the events that we had were a real proof of the power of this narrow path and the ideas and the work that we've been doing that Skye's described, where some of the events, as you mentioned, were, you know, organized around, for instance, the idea of the new violence, the culture of violence that's prominent in the youth culture right now, which is a somewhat popular issue there, but not the issue that we are addressing to really build leadership in our youth generation. And when we showed the firewall video, when we addressed the youth in the different faculties on the level of the science work that we're doing, we saw a much higher level response than, you know, if we had merely discussed the problems in our youth generation and our culture right now. Because young people right now, I mean, obvious by the youth movement that we've built up here, are looking for ideas and a real quality of leadership as opposed to the problems that we're facing in our generation. So that's we saw it in all sorts of responses, questions about the Kepler work, not just from people who are already in the youth movement there, but from people who just met us that day or never heard of LaRouche, but completely drawn in by the idea of mastering the original discoveries and original ideas of the greatest minds in human history as the key approach to developing the foundation of a real political youth movement in the world today. And, you know, there were questions about studying original sources or not studying original sources or all sorts of questions, but the discussion was very lively when it was on that level.
That's great. Thanks.
There's actually a history of this, of course, which goes back to the 19th century. Well, it goes back way further, but in the 19th century, the Alexander von Humboldt toured the Americas, South America, and was also in Mexico. And the Humboldt tradition in Mexico is quite significant because what it did is it brought the most advanced European culture at the time, which was very directly relevant to the economic development of Mexico in terms of mining technologies, in terms of work in biology, and so on and so forth. So that there was a very interesting intellectual flourishing and development in that period of the 19th century in Mexico related to these European networks. So there's certainly a tradition of finding that kind of spark and interest in Mexico. I would think that the work of people like Vernadsky in particular, which takes up this issue of how to, of biogeochemistry, that is to say, the way the individual mind, the role of the individual mind and the predominance of the noosphere in terms of shaping the geological universe around you becomes the primordial question. In a country like Mexico, which otherwise has such an obsession, almost a physiocratic obsession with natural resources, like the oil question and so on, this Vernadskian conception is a really crucial one for people to think about their country and therefore themselves and the universe and the world in the right kind of way. So the Humboldt thing, I think, is actually an interesting historical parallel on this.
Yeah, and the other real provocative idea that Lynn put forward in the Saturday discussion with the youth movement that became that echoed in many conversations afterwards was the question of what really defines a human being, and that it's nothing other than that very creative faculty, which, as Dennis mentioned earlier, can take something which is a mere slimy substance and redefine it as a resource for the improvement of the potential relative population density of mankind. And it's that investigation of that creative faculty of the human mind that is the foundation for any investigation of a human being who wants to uplift the conditions of human life for all future civilization.
Right. Let me ask, to draw this out again, if you take, Dennis, I know, well, you and I have been around the last few decades, but if you mentioned the time period of José López Portillo as president, who called for a nuclear power program, he called for a Mexican food system program, I think that's what it's translated as, self-sufficiency, and so forth. So, but in fact, Mexico's almost a case study on the world's planet in biogeochemical terms, that if a mode of development had been continued, there's even the resource base would still hold out. It's not like it's been depleted because it's been overused, as the environmentalists want to say, and you have to lock up, the Worldwide Fund for Nature says you have to lock up part of its land mass. But you would have had a tremendous trajectory. But what you were saying before is that the degradation of the situation for people, the use of the land, for the flooding that's occurred. Could you just expand that a bit in the last year?
Well, yeah, I mean, there have been devastating. Mexico is a country which is both extremely, has too much water and too little water. Both are true. It has too much water in the south and the southeast, and it has too little in the center and the northwest. The water is in the wrong place. So there are humongous floods, deadly floods in the Chiapas and the Tehuantepec and Isthmus area. And there's total water shortage in the north, in the Great American Desert, the same desert that is in Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas, and so on and so forth. So obviously you need to do two things. One is you got to take the water from where it is to where it ain't, and that requires great infrastructure projects, and that's what the Plino means, in effect, and the Pligon and the Nuapa and so on. The other thing that you have to do, however, it's not enough to just move water around. Even something like Nuapa, which is very big and brings huge amounts of water, the way Toronto was describing, from the Arctic region down through Canada and the western United States down into Mexico, you have to manufacture fresh water. You know, it's not the case that the only way to get fresh water is rain. The other way you can get fresh water is you can desalinate it. To desalinate it with economic efficiency, you have to have nuclear energy. So the issue of manufacturing fresh water immediately poses the issue of a technological revolution in the energy front, which is nuclear energy. So these are the issues that are immediately on the agenda for any country that doesn't want to starve to death or dehydrate to death. But let me just pick up on this Lopez Portillo thing, because I think it brings us back to really a central point here, which is, unlike pretty much all contemporary Mexican political leaders, with the exception of the LaRouche movement, who do not understand either who's trying to steal their oil or what oil is, all right? It's like, you know, the case of a father who may know that some guy is trying to come in and rape his daughter, but he doesn't know who it is or how he plans to do it, so he's not going to be very efficient in stopping this, as much as he would like to stop the rape. But Lopez Portillo both knew who was doing it and what oil was. He knew who was doing it, as expressed in his famous October 1982 United Nations address, which again is available on all of our websites, where he laid out the global financial crisis and the kind of solution that was needed. This was not a cacique speaking. This was not a guy who was just trying to be the big shot, the big honcho in the local neighborhood. This is a president of Mexico who went to the World Forum called the United Nations and laid out the global picture. The second point is, he knew what oil was in the sense that he knew it had to be used to transform Mexico technologically and usher in the nuclear era. Oil was not some physiocratic resource to be coveted. It was a tool for the development of technology. And both of these features, which were present in Lopez Portillo but are so absent today, have everything to do with the fact that Lopez Portillo was closely associated with Lyndon LaRouche and worked with him. And the fact that he was part of a generation, which is LaRouche's generation, which looked at things that way. The intervening generation, that of the baby boomer generation, in the United States, as in Mexico, doesn't get it. They have the problems of understanding both aspects of this problem. And it has to do with this cacique problem and the boomer ideology, which LaRouche has discussed at great length. It is up to the next generation to return to those ideas that existed between LaRouche and Lopez Portillo, but in a much more perfected way. And that, I think, is the real crucial thing which occurred on this trip, which was the fact that the work of the LaRouche Youth Movement at its highest expression, in particular the basement work, which has been discussed, was actually taken down to Mexico. And a process was initiated there, which I think is going to be absolutely revolutionary. And I think Sky and Toronto were right in the thick of it, and I certainly expect them to remain right in the thick of it.
Yeah, we intend to, and there's going to be some great. We sowed the seeds of the work, but there's going to be all sorts of developments. Some of the members are going to be coming here for a tour in the United States to return to Mexico. So there's all sorts of exciting developments to come.
Good. We only have a few seconds, so I'm just going to reiterate that May 7th, that's a Wednesday, I believe, but it's at 1 p.m. that the Lyndon LaRouche International Interactive Webcast can be, you can get that at 1 p.m. Eastern Time that day on www.larouchepac.com, LaRouchePac.com. And otherwise, make sure and listen May 3rd from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time where you are now on LaRouchePub.com with EIR News Service for the next show. But the final closeout, Naran or Sky, or I'll just ask you to say farewell, and we appreciate your being here, but to reiterate what might be coming next, take the final seconds.
Farewell.
Farewell.
Hasta pronto.
Forward. Okay, no more vampire bats. Thank you all for participating, and this is the end of the April 26, 2008 LaRouche Show. This is Marcia Mary Baker, and thank you, Sky, Taranha, and Dennis.